Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Our business panel for the week, they're here. They're anxious to get going in the shape of Gina London of the Language of Leadership, and also a columnist with the Sunday Independent, and also by Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance. You're both very welcome to the show. We'll start with the front page of the Irish Times, Robert.
Yeah.
Micheál Martin to resist EU tax on US tech firms. And before we get into that, I'll also note that the front page of the Irish Independent says that Pascal Donoghue supports threatening Trump with big tech tax. So opposite views on the front pages of both the Independent and the Irish Times from our Taoiseach and indeed government ministers.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when the same piece, Micheál Martin is talking about business craves stability. So let's, as Ireland, send a message out that the Taoiseach has a different opinion than the Minister of Finance. Yeah, I think the piece obviously that we're referring to here in the Times from Pat Leahy is really Martin obviously fighting the good fight for the people who pay our corporation tax in this country, and more referring to the fact that the EU has this, he's quoted it as a bazooka at its disposal to take action against US firms. So I presume what Martin is trying to do is much the same as I think we did with the Apple case, is to present Ireland as ultimately friendly to these people, and we will be a voice for them in the EU. Yeah. But ultimately, I don't think Ursula von der Leyen has a wider agenda than Ireland's corporation tax receipts. So
I suppose the only problem, it may test our kind of European solidarity, Gina.
Messaging is critical right now, because what, of course, Trump is driven by is by his ego, the ass-kissing that he wants from every one of these countries when he's bragging about 75 different countries have come over and say they want to negotiate. So Europe is a myth if Europe doesn't come together and say, we've got a large market, we represent 460 million people, not 330 million people. We can come together. And if mixed messages are coming out, that plays right into Donald Trump's hands.
Absolutely.
It looks like, though, the European strategy so far, anyway, has proved to be the right one.
Well,
by holding back slightly, we certainly gained into, and now, you know, the talk of this possible tax on US tech firms is probably enough to get people thinking that this is in nobody's interest.
Well, my advice is ignore Donald Trump. He hates to be ignored. Don't come and negotiate to him. Don't individually supplicate yourself to this man, and watch as quickly as he blinked to China, watch how he blinks to Europe if they come together in one voice.
Yeah. So
don't
agree.
Mix your messages and say what you're going to do before you even need to. I think it was a mistake for Micheál Martin to go public with that. He should have been waiting to see what Europe's going to do and speak in one voice.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Just a secondary piece on that story, Robert, an analysis piece by Cantillon in the Irish Times, basically saying that the EU faces a balancing act, and Gina outlined there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
It is, and it's. But one of the issues raised in it is that it will be a way to target companies whose bosses, mostly exes Elon Musk and Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, have cozied up to Trump. So again, go after his friends. But one of the things that's said here is, if anything is done to target US firms in this state, would people accept, for example, not using Gmail or Instagram or WhatsApp? And I would just contend, why would it come to that? At the end of the day, Europe, as Gina has quite rightly said, is a 460 million person market. These companies are not just going to walk away because they're upset with the amount of regulation we have or the way we tax their advertising revenue, because ultimately it's 460 million consumers.
Yeah, for their, it's not easy to walk away either.
Not, no.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's stay with this, because Cliff Taylor has a great piece in today's Irish Times. It's well worth a read. Will we be back in the Rose Garden for Liberation Day Part 2 in 3 months? This week has made one thing very clear. You can look in vain for some clever strategy behind all of this, but there simply isn't one.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this column is wide-ranging, as it should be, as it talks about the roller coaster that this past week has been, and how people are trying to look for some sort of a sense of it and decide if it is a plan, as of course the administration keeps saying, oh, it's all part of the great plan, but there isn't one. And I particularly like his words where he says, it's a mess. That the bond market is absolutely in turmoil, and that Donald Trump has destabilized that bond market so much, in fact, that investors, other players are saying, well, we're going to just sell off.
And who are the market?
China's
the
one
Chinese.
Of the players, of course. People go, oh, you know, what about the tariff wars? What about the bond market and the treasuries? Just yesterday, I think it was, they had to actually go ahead and up the interest rate. So now the United States is going to be spending more to pay off. It's a debtor country. Yeah. While he's busy focusing on the deficit, they have got to sell those treasuries. And now the 4% interest rate on the 10-year treasury bond has now just, that interest rate has been increased by 59 basis points to 4.59. So imagine what the United States is doing. It's already showing that it can't be trusted as a partner. It can't be trusted as someone that you can rely upon. And the 30 or the 90-day little pause button is not enough to restabilize what Trump himself has destabilized.
Yeah.
It is absolutely remarkable, and Cliff takes you through every piece of it. Yeah. Gold's at the highest price that it's ever been in its history.
Yeah. Robert, he also says, and if something breaks in the plumbing of the bond market,
there it is, yeah,
there's real trouble. Think of Liz Truss Square.
Absolutely.
I thought that was a nice way of kind of summing up the actual severity of this.
It is. I was having a conversation with a client during the week, and this was on Monday, and he said, you know, all the turmoil in the markets. And I said to him, I said, listen, let me explain to you like this. Trump's a child, and equity markets are like the babysitter trying to deal with a child having a tantrum. The child will pay attention to it, but the bond market is mammy with a wooden spoon.
Mm. Right.
Right.
That's a good analogy.
When mammy went for the drawer for the wooden spoon, you softened your cough. And that's the bond market. And that's what happened on Wednesday. The bond market softened his cough. And ironically enough, actually, I was reading myself on Bloomberg during the week. It was actually the Japanese who started the sell-off on US debt.
Okay.
Because they've been buying a lot of that for 20 years. And they're culturally would be quite offended by Trump deciding to turn on. They would have seen themselves a very strong ally. So yeah, you don't, like, at the end of the day, and Cliff puts it in here, the US is running a massive budget deficit. He needs the money. So picking on China, one of the biggest lenders to the US, does not look very smart. And again, why are we entrusting economic policy to a man who honestly thought the best way to deal with a hurricane was to drop a nuclear bomb into the middle of it?
Let's just not remember get into that. Bleach is the solution for COVID. Then China here, it's worth noting, it's making a very big and important play to position itself as the positive partner in investments, in trade.
Did you see the
soft investments in development around the world as well.
Yeah, the meeting with the Spanish Prime Minister, just the optics of that alone.
Exactly, and that Ursula von der Leyen's going to be coming into Beijing in July for the summit. There's a lot of global shifts that can be coming, and not the ones that Donald Trump keeps talking
about. Just the second part of that story, that the damage is done, why Donald Trump's tariff pause hasn't removed the risk of global recession is worth a mention, because really, you know, when you, and I think you've said it already, you mess with the bond markets and the damage is irreversible.
Yeah, and it's the uncertainty that it's created, Bobby. Like, business loves certainty. It's all over this piece. Like, to be fair, it's a great piece in the end by Rachel Klun, and she references one particular professor, Pujolas, from whose actual study was cited by the Trump administration to justify the tariff hikes. And he referred it to as the damage is done. He used words like reckless. And it's unfortunately, you're looking at a situation whereby an enormous amount of indecision has come into all businesses and markets over the last week or 2 weeks, and it won't be resolved over the next 90 days. So that's why the damage is done, and particularly the US credibility is really, really damaged.
And who's going to be there in the administration, as you saw that cabinet meeting this past week?
Yeah.
Who is going to be the ones to say, this is a mistake?
Yeah.
Because the one thing Donald Trump never does is admit that he's made a mistake.
Staying with matters American or related to America, accounts show that Musk's ex recorded Irish pre-tax loss of $753 million in 2022. Just looking at the numbers here, again, this company reporting out of Ireland, a $753 million loss. I also see that they had a corporation tax credit of $89 million, Robert.
Yeah.
What would that be?
I don't know. I'm thinking of it myself. Like, because Twitter's never made a profit.
Well, I presume.
How they had a corporation tax credit, maybe an R&D credit or something. God knows.
Yeah.
It never struck me. I was like, that piece didn't, I didn't understand that.
Yeah. Gina, what do you make of like these numbers, when you look at them, if we weren't, I suppose, distracted by all that's going on in the world, you'd look at a company and say, why would you want to be in any business that's losing nearly 800 million a year?
Well, once again, the long-term play with Donald Trump and with Elon Musk, it's hard to know. But this particular story that's out of the Times that you referred to, of course, is the information's coming out because there's a new data protection inquiry, which also gets to the stake to the question about your business practices and your transparency. The Data Protection Commission has launched an inquiry because they're wanting to understand how much, once Musk took over Twitter, now X, specifically here in Ireland, did he use users' posts to start to train one of his other ventures, the Grok, I don't even know how you pronounce it, AI system. So the question is, has Musk been using all of these different posts? Were there any personal data that was mined in violation of GDPR? And that's where all this financial information has been come out, that since he took over Twitter and let all those people go in 2022, then there's been that reported loss, all the different amounts of money that he had to put into redundancies and paying out the different people and then rehiring people. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch not just the business practices financially, but also in terms of their value systems and their transparency and what they're doing to boost up their other businesses.
Yeah, I know that this is linked to an even bigger play. Yeah. Robert, nice story about a startup, one of whom of the three founders was a former Fair City man, Victor Burke. He played Wayne Malloy, if any of you know him, on Fair City. So these guys, apparently they're doing... they've got a kind of a quiet quitting platform, which is basically stopping people leave your company. But they've raised a nice amount of money and they seem to be onto something.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, ultimately what they're trying to solve is the holy grail, I would say, of running a good business, as you know, which is aligning employee purpose with company objectives. And they've quoted stats here that up to 60% of employees in some companies are this quiet quitting, which is effectively doing the minimum in their workplace and becoming psychologically detached from their jobs. So it's great to see another Irish business, again, in America, by the way. But we won't talk about that. But an Irish business, Dosen, by the way, is the name of the business. And to be fair to them, yeah, if they can nail it, it's a phenomenal opportunity because every business today is talking about struggling, about retaining good talent and looking after talent. So, yeah, the best of luck to them and well done.
Monetizing something like quiet quitting could be tricky, Gina.
Well, look, there's a lot of money in play from companies that are, and I work, of course, in the space as a consultant around employee engagement and retention. As you said, too, the idea that it takes a lot of money to attract and retain talent is essential. So what they've done, and I think fair play to them, Fair City guy, fair play to them. But the idea that you've taken this buzzword of quiet quitting and then you've made some sort of platform, which none of the articles in either the Times or the Indo say what actually the software is that they use to somehow monitor and help facilitate better engagement in order to keep these employees engaged and keep them therefore employed and not quitting. But hey, if they've made a good
Fair
pitch
City
to
is
investment,
a much better, much
that's
better
why he's an, well, he's an actor, so that, you know, when you're doing a pitch to investors, but in all accountability or fair play to them, they got over $2 million in seed money. That's not a bad play. Yeah. Yeah. But with whether or not they can actually sustain it and make an impact, because it is a quite a saturated market, employee recognition, employee software around that kind of stuff. So we'll see if they can get some traction off it. Why not? Yep.
We're coming to that time of year, one of the big chocolate events in the diary with Easter next week. We have a nice piece here in the Irish Independent, Inside the Butler's Factory, The Making of an Easter Egg and How Brand Embraces Trends. So this is a business I know well for many years. What did you make of this, Robert?
I loved it. Like, Butler's are a great Irish brand, and like, to be fair to them, like it says in the piece here, a lot of our Easter eggs are sent all over the world to New Zealand, Australia and the US. And interestingly enough, they ship them before Christmas.
Yeah.
So, but really good. I want to draw one piece. It was just an insight, kind of relates to what our friends in the startup were up to. It said, one member of staff meticulously places almonds on each individual treat before it goes through to be enrobed in white chocolate. Another spreads chocolate flakes over spheres of milk chocolate. Our staff are proud of working for Butlers. So there's a great brand about aligning employee purpose with company objectives. Yeah, really.
Yeah, no, it's a great business. And again,
it's a nice profile piece about the business, of course, with the hook of Easter, as I'm sitting here in the radio room dressed kind of all in pink like an Easter egg myself.
I meant to comment on Gina London in magnificent pink, shocking pink even.
But what I thought about this one is a lot of these wonderful brands that have already built a strong reputation, they do find that urge to jump on a trend. So you were talking about TikTok a moment ago, and TikTok is just one of these things. My daughter is a teenager, so the amount of trends that come and go in the blink of an eye, Butlers in this article has leapt on the one trend that's sticking a little bit this year anyway, which is the pistachio cream filled so-called Dubai chocolate. And an Easter egg is coming out this week in a limited edition in that particular blend of confection, which I would say get it now, because I was in the Middle East in January and everybody wanted me to bring back some. I went back to Dubai in February, little more clamor. My daughter said, yeah, I'll take one. I'm on a plane tomorrow to Abu Dhabi. Nobody's asking for it.
So I heard of somebody last week who paid 50 euros for a bar of this pistachio chocolate.
I don't know why, because you
neither do I, but they did.
But yeah, I think you get the Easter egg this year, but I don't expect it's going to be a trend this year, because those TikTok trends come and go with breakneck speed.
Yeah, true.
Robert, they used to say about the Brits that they were a nation of shopkeepers, and the joke now, and it's not a joke, because there are some really awful statistics in this piece. We're becoming a nation of shoplifters.
Yeah,
it's shocking. And you know, some of the numbers in this piece are truly horrific.
They are. It's like I have a number of clients who work in the retail space, and it's just heartbreaking, because margins are tight enough as they are, and then you're forced with this. But the numbers are nuts. Like they say, Cork City, the number of reported incidents has risen 86% in two decades, but 27% increase between 23 and 24 alone.
Yeah.
It's absolute.
It's over a quarter.
It's a quarter.
Yeah.
And like they're talking about the causes and banning orders. Like, banning orders aren't going to sort this. And I've seen, and I my business is based in Dublin City, and I will comment that there has been a more visible presence of Gardaí on the streets. And I just think retailers need that level of protection. Like the numbers here are nuts. There was a person down in Cork, 33-year-old woman, who was jailed after a series of offences, including kicking a staff member in Spar in the groin, another instance at Tesco Express in Central. She had 39 previous convictions. Another person had 172 convictions and got a 9-month sentence.
Yeah.
But when you do the numbers, only 3% of offenders go to jail.
Yeah, and the other point, and that's probably the salient point, Robert, but they also say, if this is correct, and we think it is, that shoplifting is a conveyor belt to something worse, then we have to change our strategy. More than half of shoplifters commence their activities in their teenage years, Gina. So really what this piece is saying is that if action could be taken here, you could maybe prevent some people from a life of crime.
Look, it's a disappointing situation when you think about the, I don't know, relative affluence of people here in Ireland. And then you think about they also point out here that it's the small businesses that are the ones being hurt, or that are really being hit hardest, because of course they don't have big margins that they can afford this kind of shrinking. When the mention in Tesco, well, that's a multinational big conglomerate, and I'm saying that's okay, but it is alarming. And it is this is not the first article. We've been hearing reports about this coming out again and again with more and alarm. This is, of course, now we have real statistics from the Central Statistics Office to back it up. But it is really concerning. And if you can make a difference in a teenager to help them understand that you're not just taking away from the man or some unknown entity, you are actually hurting real families who are doing a livelihood. Perhaps there's a way to personalize it to help prevent it.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll see some change there. This next piece, I think, is yet the interesting bit is probably yet to come, because I don't think the court case has started yet. But gargantuan data search in the Magna estate sale case. Robert, what do you make of this? And as I say, I think there's more to come here in terms of this being a almost like a reality TV, and when it comes to the legal piece.
There's a bit of Succession, I think, in this one. But when I see gargantuan data and a court case, I think lawyer fees. So great. So as usual, the people going to make the most money out of this deal. So yeah, 3,300 documents, 3 terabytes of data. Like that's an incredible amount of data, and all over a farm being valued at either 15 million or 22.5 million, which kind of, what's the real story is always probably never properly disclosed. But yeah, and it's yet to go to court. But it is just, it's an incredible amount of legal work over what would be, in the grand scheme of things, a pretty small deal.
Yeah, and it we'll see what transpires, but it appears somebody thought there was a deal done at 15 million. Somebody else said there wasn't. And then the new price is 22 million. So, yeah, lots to roll on this one, Gina.
Well, there's some money to be made somewhere. And I think the attorneys are saying, well, give us more documents to find. We'll happily bill you some hours.
Now, Gina, I thought this last piece might have been of interest to you because this is where we featured as in Bloomberg earlier this week. They were talking about the Irish and that you'll often see on a floor pan in an Irish house, you'll see a nook labelled with the letters HP.
And it's not Hewlett-Packard.
And Americans didn't know that that meant hot
no
mess.
Idea. When I first moved here, I was saying to Robert before we came on, I was in my wonderful renter and the lovely lady who was our landlord opened up like with so much pride, like opened up this closet, this double door closet, and there were shelves in it that she had painstakingly marked single fitted sheet, double flat sheet. And she's like, This is the hot press. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then that led me down the whole thing about introduction to the immersion. I'm like, oh my God, I have to turn this little button on for 20 minutes before I can take a shower.
And your ESP bill will rocket if you leave it on.
My heavens.
If you forget to turn it off.
We've busted the myth on this thing, though, because I'd finally got my water heater guy up in Dublin to say, no, the elements now are modern. You don't need to do that at all. So thank God I never had a father in the 1980s telling me to, did you leave the immersion?
Yeah, it's always the great debate. My God, I remember it well. Thank you both for a great review of the business stories. Gina London of the Language and Leadership and Sunday Independent columnist, also Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.